Live across this big, brown, flat, mysterious, crazy country, Coca-Cola presents Martin Malloy with Mick Malloy and Tony Martin.
And today, Australia's least incisive post-budget analysis. We promise you that. We've got an exclusive interview with Susie Moroney. We're looking for the world's best job. And Mick's ready for another unpleasant Martin Malloy flashback. We'll play Radio Gladiators, Meet the Prize Dicks, go down the Vegemite tube, and welcome our guest, hunter, collector, and now solo man, Mark Seymour. Yes, it's all coming up on the program that's promising relief for pensioners. That's right, it finishes in 2 hours. Martin Malloy. His arms, that'll be Bon Jovi, and this'll be Martin Malloy. Good afternoon, Australia. Welcome to our delightful midweek edition with myself, Tony Martin, and this bloke here, the least successful of those Nicky Buckley stand-ins, Mick Malloy.
Yeah, we'll see about that. We'll see who's laughing at the end of the day.
Yeah, I've heard about you stealing from the gift shop, replacing all those celebrity faces on the Fame Game board with shots from Studley's in the Woman's Forum. When they turn around, I mean, it's just embarrassing.
Yeah, well.
And, hey, we're not the only one here today. We're not the only one.
Oh.
That's right, me and you, we're not the only one.
Good.
People still write into this program going, that young Martin Malloy.
He's a wily youngster.
Take him off. No, let's welcome back our producer, Gracie.
Oh, there he is.
Oh, he's got the cravat on. Fantastic. He's been away being, well, I don't know what the official term for it is, shark decoy for Susie Moroney.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Did you see Gracie on the clips? Just there, just throwing chips and potato fritters into the cage.
Oh, yeah.
Bit of a gag, man.
Oh, I see. That's your caper, is it? On you, Gracie.
All right. Now, what's going on? Just going through. Was there some kind of budget last night, Mickey?
Let me think of it.
Yeah, there was. I've just got this list in the paper today of budget winners and losers. Mm. And the winners, of course, always the families selected to be photographed as your typical budget-affected family in the paper. How do you get into those photos?
Oh, I don't know, mate.
Oh, gee. Mm. I want to get onto that job.
Sure.
Listen to this. Winners include Peter Costello.
Great.
Hmm? There's somebody else in there.
There is.
There's more people on that list. Oh, yes, here we go. Home carers.
Oh, good.
Home carers. That's an annoying new term, isn't it? Carer. Everyone's a carer these days, have you noticed? My garbage man, he's been reclassified as a refuse carer. bellboy, suitcase carer.
Absolutely.
Undertaker, corpse carer.
Yep.
Proctologist, bottom carer. Everyone's a carer now. Carers are celebrating as small business people. Mm. Is that politically correct for midget shopkeeper?
Oh,
I can't tell.
I do not know.
I can't tell. I just don't know. Country motorists, Olympic athletes, and, of course, elderly people who agree to keep working and working and working till they eventually die on the job are all over the moon today.
Great.
But the losers, well, listen to this list. People who wear spectacles. Mm. Oh, right. Would that be targeted at me? Let's see. Other losers, skinny blokes, New Zealanders, and hosts of Martin Malloy. That's just vindictive.
You're gone.
Did you see Peter Costello's budget address last night, Mickey? Mm. I've got some clips here.
Okay.
It all began when the Speaker of the House ordered the skylight open and a pigeon flew in. Did you see that? Yeah.
I have received a message from His Excellency the Governor General recommending, in accordance with Section 56 of the Constitution, an appropriation for the purposes of the Appropriation Bill number 1. I call it treasurer.
Mr. Speaker, I present the Appropriation Bill number 1, 1997-98.
Clerk.
First reading, a bill for an act to appropriate money out of the Consolidated Revenue Fund for the service of the year ending on 30 June 1998 and for related purposes.
Treasurer.
Mr. Speaker, I move that the bill now be read a second time.
Clerk.
A bill for an act to appropriate money out of the Consolidated Revenue Fund for the service of the year ending on 30 June 1998 and for related purposes.
Treasurer.
What's going on there?
In last year's budget, delivered less than 9 months ago, this government laid out a plan to turn around Australia's finances and secure our future. Our country had been on a losing strategy, a path of deficit and debt to the next century. So we took that problem.
Yeah, there's probably enough of that. What's with reading that out twice? What's
I have
going
no
on
idea.
There?
No idea.
It's the appropriation of the appropriations bill.
Mm-hmm.
But at one point, Costello actually put on the Martin Malloy Pinocchio nose. Check this out.
It is the first budget to be prepared in accordance with the Charter of Budget Honesty Bill. The specific measures I'm announcing tonight are directed to helping families, boosting small business, creating jobs, and encouraging saving.
It's a whopper.
It's a big one. And he started to lose the crowd towards the end, but that was until he pulled a fantastic trick out of the bag.
The savings rebate is estimated to cost $350 million in 1998-9 and $1.4 billion in 1999-2000. Mr. Speaker.
The government is also announcing tonight a number of other major measures to improve the operation of our superannuation and retirement income system. These are designed to promote savings, choice and incentive. The government considers it important to ensure that savings through superannuation are directed to their intended purpose, providing income in return.
Zell, young hearts run free. It's Martin Molloy, and what else is going on in the real world?
Oh, I don't know if you'd call this real world, but Tone. Congratulations must go to our record-breaking marathon swimmer, Susie Maroney. She spends more time in the water than your ordinary abalone. I love her. She loves me. That's the way it ought to be. Making love covered in chicken fat heading out to sea. You like my little tribute there, Tone?
Oh, that's fantastic.
I've been working on that all day.
Can we get that on permanent rotation? That's fantastic.
You're kicking yourself you didn't think of that first, aren't you?
Oh, look
at that. Hey, be caught with your pants down again, chumbly bum.
Should have got that. I had a whole list of words that rhyme with Maroney. And
see, I came in today, Tone, and I've gone Boney Maroney, Susie Maroney, took the rest of the day off.
That's how it works. He's been out in the hammock smoking a Cuban all day.
Indeed. And yes, it's true, a giant prune claiming to be Susie Maroney was hauled out of the ocean at Florida Key West yesterday after swimming all the way from Cuba, a feat never before achieved. Oh. Fairly impressive, although, Tone, I couldn't believe it when she just got out and went and had a lie down.
Yeah.
What about the cycling leg?
Oh,
what about the 20K run?
Yeah, I mean,
if you're going to start something, you may as well finish it.
Yeah.
She should have been dragged out of the ocean, whopped in a pair of gum boots and been made to shuffle off down the road, Cliffy Young style, pointed in the general direction of New York.
Oh, it's not too late.
Well, exactly. We'll get someone onto it. Everyone wants a piece of her now, though, Tone.
Oh,
do you notice?
Geez.
Well, I've called in a few favours and managed to get her on the line now, live from Florida. It's Susie Maroney. Susie, are you there?
Yes, I am, Mick, and thanks for the tracky decks. Now my butt's toasty warm.
Ah, yes. I used to have a seven-legger on the backside, just like your bathers, but it mysteriously disappeared after a particularly feisty.
Actually, I was sitting in a shopping trolley inside the shark cage, wrapped in chicken wire with a metal bin on my head.
Wow, a metal bin on your head. That would have impressed Ray. He's had a metal bin on his head for years. Now, tell me, Susie, what was the first thing you did when you finished the swim?
Oh, I popped into a nice hot bath.
Really? And was your coach standing beside the bath with a megaphone going, come on, Susie, hang in there. The tide's changing. We can get them, champ. Yeah, I'll take that as a no. So what's ahead for you now, Susie? Book deals? Lucrative ad campaigns?
No, actually, I thought I'd enter the Miss Universe contest.
Really?
Yes, I plan to be the only contestant in the swimsuit section to be covered from head to toe in chicken fat.
Susie Maroney, thanks for your time.
Oh, thanks, Mick. Oh, and Mick, if you see Tony Bullimore, tell him I found one of his fingers.
From Alicia's attic here in Martin Molloy. And in case you haven't heard, Peter Costello dropped a budget last night. And Mick, have you recovered from that?
Oh, I have. And thank you very much for getting me in to see the budget live. That was fantastic.
Yeah, I pulled some strings and I got those tickets. So thanks very much. You know,
I enjoyed myself immensely. I hope. What?
Look, you realise you were representing the program.
Yeah.
You were there on behalf of Martin Molloy.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know that you did us proud.
Oh, no.
Just think back. See if you can recall what you did.
What would I have done that would have offended anyone?
No increase in the wholesale sales tax rate. No lift in the petrol excise. In fact, for the second budget in a row tonight, I will announce tax reductions.
Tax reductions at your ass, you big smarmy.
The government's program of budget repair is being accomplished on the expenditure side. From our coming to office to the turn of the decade, underlying outlays are projected to fall from 27% of GDP to just under 23%.
Put some hands on you, clown!
This year's budget papers provide unprecedented information on our fiscal strategy and economic outlook. It is the first budget to be prepared in accordance with the Charter of Budget Honesty Bill.
It's the first budget to be pulled fair from your back passage, you pill!
When enacted, that charter will require all future governments to match the standards of integrity and financial reporting that we are setting today.
Hey, Costello! Why don't you sit Howard on your knee like a ventriloquist doll and see if you can't deliver the budget and drink a glass of water at the same time?
The specific measures I'm announcing tonight are directed to helping families.
Oh, yeah.
Boosting small business.
Pull the other one.
Creating jobs. And encouraging saving.
And I'm Bishop Desmond Tutu.
Mr. Speaker, increasing savings will bring important economic benefits for Australia.
This budget's on the bugle. Whoa.
It will reduce our reliance on foreign debt.
Taxi! Mr. Costello, taxi!
With more saving, we can finance more of our investment to grow the economy faster and produce jobs.
Yeah, that's fine, but we were hoping to see you fly around the room like David Copperfield.
Tonight I announce the government's plan to reduce the tax on saving.
Yeah. How about a quick Macarena?
Every Australian will be eligible for a 15% tax rebate on their savings.
Yeah. Bum, bum, a day, bum, a day, bum, a day, oh.
The measure will be introduced in two stages.
Bum, bum, a day, bum, a day, bum, a day, oh.
With a 7.5% rebate from 1 July 1998.
Bum, bum, a day, bum, a day, bum, a day, oh.
And the full rebate from 1 July 1999.
Oh.
The rebate will apply to the first $3,000 of taxable income from savings, however derived.
Get on with it, idiot! We're not here for a haircut!
For example...
Oh, here we go!
The rebate would apply to the whole of the interest earned on $60,000 invested at 5%.
Ooh, pinch me! Someone pinch me! Can it be true?
Alternatively, the rebate can be claimed in respect of any payment of personal contributions into superannuation up to $3,000.
Would anyone like fries with that?
A person who pays $3,000 into superannuation will get a $450 tax rebate.
That's him, officer. That's the man. He came over my back fence and stole all my underwear straight off the clothesline.
The 15% rebate applies to the marginal tax rate.
Oh, no. Oh, I'm going to Labour.
For a person on the 20% tax rate, it will mean...
Pete, can you fill in for me on the gift shop on sale? Oh, thanks, bud.
The income they put into superannuation...
We should be back any second.
I think so. Just waiting for the satellite to come round.
Mm-hmm.
Jeez. Oh, this next hour is an absolute fucking...
I don't have anything.
No, it's going to be shocking.
I'm going to try and make something up in this one. We're nearly back on, Gracie.
Yeah.
Blondie!
Hey!
Sarah Martin Malloy, and we got a sensational next hour.
Oh, I'm sitting on gold.
Nah, look, it is going to be good. We've got Mark Seymour dropping by.
Mm-hmm.
Hunters and Collectors, of course, still
mm-hmm.
going.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people think that they're not.
Oh, no.
Just because they haven't been out of the back shed for a while.
Mm.
They've got a new album, I think, coming Christmas time. But Mark has his own solo project up and running, and he'll be talking to us about that in the next hour. Also, Prize Dicks.
Mm.
And what did we have yesterday? We had a woman in a department store on too many Demazin tablets, getting on the voiceover and telling everyone to go home early.
Yeah, she's organising her own trading hours.
If she wants to come in with the Demazin, she can host the show one day.
She could call it off early.
Okay.
A lot of people would be into that.
All right, and also Radio Gladiators is on the way now. Mick, we've been making a lot of jokes at Peter Costello's expense, but seriously, I was watching the budget, and I think he's been coached a bit too.
He is.
They're trying to de-smarm him to a certain extent. And listen, I didn't tape it, but apparently after the budget address,
I think later that night on the ABC, they were interviewing him. Now, well, you were supposed to set the video for that. What have you got?
I got it on video. It says, yeah, I think the image makers have been going to town. Because right. I think they've just softened him up a tad.
Okay.
They made him just a tap. Have a listen to this. Right. Here he's asked about the unions.
Okay. I mean, if unions really care, if they're really socialistic and say we care about our fellow man, why can't they force, why can't they march about something like that?
Doing it for your time?
Yeah, that's for themselves. But why not a few pounds for somebody else who's really hard up?
Gee, there you go.
That's a great clip of Peter Costello.
Mind you, he's still fairly controversial.
Well, when a union does something like jeopardising the work of their fellow men, if you stop trains, people can't get to their work, can they? Can they? They can't get to work.
It's a good point.
So in doing what you want for yourself, you're jeopardising your fellow men.
Well,
why can't you act in concert with your fellow men?
Here we go.
Why do you have to do something which endangers the livelihood of your fellow men? You don't just work for another pound. When I took my job at £3.10 a week, I asked them in small parts.
He's always on about that, the old
47,
days.
That's what I got. 47 or £3.10 a week, and the digs were 25 bob all in. And the rest I had the soap and the fag. And they got me to our picture shove round the bend. You're not saying I want another pound all the time. You're saying I want to do the work better.
Yes, but
now, that was the kind of morality I was brought up with. But don't do a job just for what you get. You do the job because you want to do it well.
Can I say, I think that's crap. I mean, I'm sorry.
I've never been so insulted.
Oh, turn it off.
Are you sure that's Late Line, Mickey?
I promise you. That was Kerry O'Brien and Peter Costello.
Okay, and just quickly, here's some news. I know everyone's talking about the budget, but what about the failure of Vegemite in a tube?
Hey?
Kraft launched it last November, but it seems Australians would rather stick with the jars. Thank you very much. The Vegemite tube hasn't been popular. Too many people, I think, are squeezing it from the middle, not from the bottom, and that's always ugly when you're making a sandwich.
Yeah.
Kraft, who weren't short of ideas, you know what, they came out with some other ones. Did you see a new tartar control Vegemite?
No.
That was pretty useful.
Right.
And what else do they have? The Factor 15 Vegemite, that was a beauty. But that tube, it just causes confusion,
yeah,
doesn't it?
Yeah, it
You're
does.
Not used to condiments in a tube.
No.
I accidentally fitted one to a corking gun the other week, thinking it was that No More Gap stuff. All the floorboards in our kitchen have got Vegemite between them now. It's a great conversation starter. But it was a bold packaging experiment, so hats off to them. And there's some beauts coming out in coming weeks.
Oh, yeah.
You'll see new toothpaste in a bucket, individually wrapped hundreds and thousands.
Right.
You're going to go down a storm. Loaf of bread in a tissue box. That's a beauty. You just pull them out.
Right.
Making some toast. And, you know, when you get right down the bottom, you have the slice elevator, so you can get the last few crusts.
I like it.
What else? For the family dog, new aerosol pal. It's not only tasty, it's fun to apply. But I understand the people at Preparation H have abandoned their bold new innovation, rectal floss, altogether.
This is Martin Malloy.
You're listening to Martin Malloy. Thanks to Coca-Cola. Mick, let's put the budget behind us. Can we do that?
Yep.
Because it's just been too incisive, I feel.
It has indeed.
And Pete, what have we got now?
Radio Gladiators, your chance to represent your state and win fame, glory, and fabulous prizes. Here's today's challenge.
Yesterday we were talking about a bloke who I think has got one of the world's best jobs, the Deep Blue Proxy.
Oh, yeah.
The bloke who sits opposite Garry Kasparov and beats the pants off him without having to know the first thing about chess. Just sitting there in a bow tie, waving to the crowd, waving to his mum at home, stirring Kasparov and waiting for Deep Blue to pass the moves on to him. What a fantastic gig.
It's brilliant. You're right in there amongst it, aren't you?
The ladies would love you. Those chess babes.
Yeah.
You know what they're like? So I think that's a good a cue as any for world's best job. We do this from time to time. We want you to call us up and tell us what you think would be the world's best job. What's a job you've had your eye on? You'd like to, you know, sink your teeth into? Federal treasurer? Dunno. Think we can go better than that. What, have you got one, Mickey?
Doorman on Susie Moroney's shark cage.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm mucking around, of course. But that strikes me as being quite amusing. Yeah. Sorry, fellas, no sharks around here. You'll have to take that elsewhere. Can't help you tonight, fellas.
Yeah, not with those fins, pal. That's a job. That's certainly a job.
There you go.
I've talked about a few before. I met him. It was my lifelong dream to meet him, and I met him at Christmas. I've been talking about it all year. The bloke who puts the cape on, James Brown. That is the best job in show business.
Yep.
Because you don't... It's like, Kasparov proxy. You don't have to know nothing about nothing except hanging capes on James.
Yeah. Or indeed hanging a cape on Kasparov.
There you go. Does he have one of those?
I think he does from time to time.
Please don't go. Kasparov, don't go. And then he runs back in. Oh, I was just kidding. Come back here, Blue. I haven't finished with you yet.
You know what he's doing now, don't you? What's Kasparov. He's currently playing a remote control garage door.
Is it?
It's three games each.
Yeah,
he's hanging in there.
He's got his head in his hands. It's doing the Kasparov. Okay, what about Sansia? Have you got a job? Have you got, or your eye on a job?
No, it was when I was young. I really wanted to be the pool lady. You know, the lady that just walks around the pool all day long?
Just telling people
eating
off.
Lollies. Eating lollies and eating sausage rolls. That's the job for me.
Telling people not to run. I ran by the pool.
Yeah. It never did anything.
That's where the skill comes into it. Okay, well, that's a pretty good one.
Yeah.
That's.
And when did that dream start to fade for you, Sans? When did you realise it wasn't going to happen?
I don't know, Mick. It was slowly, painfully wrenched away from me.
Okay, I'm sorry to hear that, Sans.
And it's all led to this job, of course.
Downhill from there.
Pretending to be Susie Moroney on the phone. Have we got one from our producer, Gracie?
Well, in the 80s, I was a huge Bruce Springsteen fan, and every time you saw him on stage or in videos, he was always wearing these tattered, worn clothes. And I figured, well, there's got to be a guy who wears these clothes for him.
Oh, there must be an army of people doing that.
So, Bruce Springsteen's clothes roadie.
I'll fight you for that job, Gracie. Your jeans are here, quick. Start rolling about. Mm. All right, well, they're all great jobs, but they don't have to be showbiz related, by the way. Mm. We just want to hear your idea for the world's best job. Any others, Mickey? You just want to get out of your system?
Tony Bullimore's manicurist.
That'd be fun.
You'd be
That'd be a doddle. Yeah. You'd be home early. You'd be home in time for wheel. Do we have a prize? Yes, indeed. Oh, there's someone with a top job. Shaft. He had a great job.
Oh, yeah.
Just wearing that hair.
That's it.
And them flares. Okay, you'll win a six-pack of CDs. It's twice as good as the old Martin Malloy three-pack, and it contains the new album from Dave Graney, The Devil Drives. And don't forget Dave's single, Feeling Kind of Sporty. It's out now. Call us with your idea for the world's best job. 1-800-657-657. It's Groove from, of course, Central Business District. No, CDB here at Martin Malloy. That's an actual mistake.
Is it?
That somebody made here at the station recently. Mm-hmm. And I'm enjoying it so much, I'm just repeating it whenever possible.
Good for you.
Like, remember when Pete told us last week he got up in front of a crowd of 2,000 people and introduced Jenny Morris as somebody who'd worked with INXS? Anything for a laugh, that man.
There's a good job. But, Mr. Copperart.
Do we have to go on? That's what we're doing here at Radio Gladiators. We're looking for the world's best job. And who's going first?
Let's try Catherine.
Hi.
Are you there? How are you?
Good, how are you?
Oh, not too bad. What particular job do you have your beady little eyes on, Catherine?
I reckon a beer taster.
Oh, beer taster. And surely somebody has to do that.
Yeah, you know. Well, you get to go around to each pub.
Yeah.
You get to check out the guys, drink the beer and taste some food.
Wow.
You've got it all worked out, haven't you?
Definitely.
Yeah. And is this something you've actually, you know, had a crack at?
I work in the liquor industry anyway, but, one step further than what I'm doing now.
Well, what about the bloke who does the testing when he phones in sick, which would be quite often, and I'm imagining, do you go, I'll do that?
Yeah, definitely, first up.
Going for a test.
Good on you, Catherine.
Well, that's a pretty good job, and there'll be a queue for that one, but what is Bernie sitting on? You there, Bernie?
Yeah, I'm here.
What's your idea of the world's best job?
Oh, I had the world's best job.
Did you? What was it?
In the days of Barry McKenzie in London...
Mm.
I worked at the Playboy Club.
Oh, the Playboy Club.
I was the bunny brother. I used to have to take the girls home after work.
Oh, yeah.
Make sure no Arabs interfered with them on their way home.
Oh, I see. So you're in charge of the bunnies.
And when I had the holidays, they used to send me over to, when they had the Bunny of the Year type thing.
Oh, yeah.
They used to send me across to Los Angeles to stay at Hugh Hefner's place, and I used to drive them around there.
And did you have your own little dressing gown when you were there?
Dressing gown? I had my own little black book, I know that.
Look out.
Okay. He's had the best job. We won't ask why you no longer have the best job in the world. Hope you didn't soil your britches, Bernie.
No, and I love in the Barry McKenzie era. Okay, it just paints so much of a picture in itself.
Mind you, Tane, any job that gets you to the Playboy Mansion, that's a big tick.
Oh, and would you have had to have worn the little ears? We need to know that, but there's no time because Corey's waiting to go. Corey, world's best job, what is it?
Four words. Mel Costin's travel agent.
Oh, yes. You don't need any other clients.
No, that's it. Just the one.
And round the clock, obviously on call at any moment.
24 hours, night or day, ready to go.
Well, that's pretty good.
It is a good job, but it would it'd probably be filled by a family member at some stage, I imagine.
There's quite a queue. All right, Christy, are you there?
Yes, I am.
What's your idea of the world's best job?
I'd work as somebody's hitman for the Spice Girls.
You'd like to, if somebody took out a contract on the Spice Girls, you'd be the person to fill the shoes, yep, would you?
Absolutely.
Oh, not a fan?
No, not really.
Who's your least favourite Spice Girl?
Everybody says I look like Emma.
Which, oh, that's, which
one? Baby Spice.
Oh, Baby Spice.
Or after you've got to a Corpsey Spice.
Right, and what about the others? You're not keen on them at all?
No, not really.
All right, yeah. I don't know if...
You could have fun for hours. There's another Gladiators all together. How would you bump off the Spice Girls? Oh, we can't open that can of worms.
I don't know, but, you know, they'd all end up wearing those false mows like that bloke from Donnie Brasco we had on the show a couple of weeks ago. Imagine that. Being moved from safe house to safe house.
Mm.
All right, I think Jason is waiting to go. Jason, have you got an idea for a job?
Mate, I've got my ideal job.
Have you? What is it?
I work in a morgue.
Oh,
good.
Great. Why is that the world's best job?
Well, being North Queensland, it's pretty hot up here.
Mm.
So it's air-conditioned comfort.
Yeah.
Oh. Get to meet lots of people.
Yes.
Get to know I'm deeply inside.
Oh, okay.
No one annoys you.
I don't know
you.
If that's a good idea.
It is.
Is that a fantastic job?
Oh, I think that's a beauty.
Yeah.
Don't think you can go past it.
And remember, the customer is always dead. That's what they say in that business.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, thanks, Jason. He's calling us from Queensland.
He is indeed.
He works in a morgue. Stay clear of him. That's my advice to you. I think Andrew is going last. You there, Andrew?
Yeah, I'm here.
What have you got for a job? Or is it your job or one you're aspiring to?
No, what I'm aspiring to. I used to have aspirations of being a radio DJ till I heard of a little thing called Martin Molloy.
Yes, it's not a good example for the young folk.
But the best job I've heard of is the guy that works in Newcastle that gets paid by the council to go around and have sex with prostitutes.
That's right.
I think we have a winner.
Yes. That's absolutely true. They're trying to find out if there's brothels in the district. They're paying a private investigator $200 per visit, according to the article we read, to confirm once and for all that they are brothels. And as we said, Andrew, how many visits do you think it would take?
It would probably take me a few.
Yes.
Exactly. Attention to detail, Andrew. Yeah. If a job's worth doing, it's worth doing properly.
Been out all afternoon investigating my brains out. Okay, that's our winner. Andrew, we've got a six-pack of CDs for you.
That's great.
And it contains the latest one from D. Graney. And thanks to everyone who had an idea for a job. We'll be back in the next hour with somebody who's got a job with Hunters and Collectors, but he's also going solo, Mark Seymour. And in this hour of Martin Molloy, prize dicks, another visit from Virtual Pete. And next up, Mark Seymour comes out of his shell, all thanks to Coca-Cola. A bit of an assist from Shaggy here at Martin Molloy with that girl. It's the second hour, and while we're talking music, this bloke, for many years, he's been out front of Hunters and Collectors on the Yodel big time. Now he's gone all solo. His live shows are getting rave reviews, and the paint's almost dry on his new album, King Without a Clue. Please. Let's hear it, see it, and smell it for Mark Seymour. Mark, thanks for dropping by.
Oh, appreciate it.
You're on your own? You haven't got any band with you?
Not at the moment, no.
How's that been for you?
Pretty scary to begin with, and then it's been a while now. I've been flogging myself around the town with an acoustic guitar, so
right.
For a while, so I'm getting used to it, yeah.
And was that a conscious decision to leave the band, or did they all just piss off?
Well,
was there trouble brewing?
Strictly speaking, the band hasn't broken up.
No.
Okay.
And a few of the fans will be pleased to hear that, I hope.
Sure they will be.
Because a lot of rumours are flying around that the band doesn't exist anymore, which isn't true.
That usually happens, though, doesn't it, when someone goes and does a bit of a solo.
Perceptions artist. Would suggest that. Yeah,
I remember when, I think it was Paul Whitney. Stanley, Kiss, did his solo album, and everyone else went, oh, hang on a bit.
It was the same when Lamal left Kajagoogoo. They said, well, that's it for the band. It's a serious music program, mate.
Yeah, well,
oh, yeah.
I get your drift. I'm with you.
You're tuning in now, aren't you? Can Hunters and Collectors ever break up? I mean, it's been, what, 16 years now? It seems to me to be like the Firm. There's no way you're ever going to bust up
well,
that
it's
little
a bit
outfit.
Like, I mean, you know, we sort of took a two-year break, which is part of the reason why I did this. And yet we kept getting off of these gigs, you know. And it sort of ended, a whole new sort of chapter began, and the agency hasn't obviously didn't realise we weren't playing, you know. Kept offering us these gigs we couldn't refuse, so we kept going, you know. Right.
And what sort of band leader, or are you a band leader really in Hunters and Collectors?
Well, I actually don't
Mark?
Know. No. That's a question I've often asked myself. Oh, we've asked each other, who is the leader of this band, you know? Mm. No one seems to know, actually.
I remember first seeing Hunters and Collectors, I think it was at Waikato University on the other side
You're
of the Tasman. Oh, I'm afraid so. There's no getting around it. Are you going to storm out? Oh, this is trouble.
Oh, there's so many Kiwis in the entertainment industry.
Pauline Hanson's trying to weed us all out and send us home, but nothing's
she's
happened.
She's a Kiwi, isn't she?
Oh, is she? Don't try and point that at us. And I think Hunters and Collectors, what I remember about them in the early 80s is you decided to go with brass when no one else was really doing it. Was that unusual at that time?
Well, this guy came up to me at a gig in town, a very big gentleman, good at football. Hmm. His name was Jack, and he was holding a trumpet.
Right.
And he said, you need a brass section. I said, what now? And he goes, yes. And we've never looked back.
You've been stuck with that section ever since.
And he's, you know, a very dedicated player.
The other thing, of course, I remember about those days was the slab. Hunters and Collectors immortalised the slab in song.
Well, you know, it was just a very fundamental part of our lives at that time in history, the slab. That was just such an incredibly Australian concept, you know, that you call this large metal object full of brown liquid a slab. Mm. You know, people would ask you what the hell you were talking about.
I did enjoy the full-on live performances of Hunters and Collectors. It was one of the few tribal experiences still available to us in this day and age. I used to leave a Hunters and Collectors gig and want to go and scalp someone, you know what I mean, with my bare hands.
Yeah. How mad did the fans get back in those days?
Selena's was where it reached its peak, really.
Oh, really?
Half the audience were half naked.
Yeah.
And mostly blokes.
Mm.
And,
including myself.
I think radio discovered a new demographic one particular night, and you know, we changed the face of radio just from one show.
What's the biggest one you've ever played of that nature? Have you ever gone to one of those big, massive rock pig kind of Woodstock gigs and had people just throwing themselves up on stage and setting fire to you?
Christchurch about a month ago, and it's about 30,000 people.
30,000 Christchurch? Were they all on bicycles? It's a bicycling
town.
Yeah,
it was very healthy. A lot of dads and mums and kids. It was a really strange mixture of ferals, bikies, academics.
Oh, right. And you've got kids yourself, of course, Mark. Will you allow your kids to go along to your shows?
With headphones.
Is that right?
Big ones, yeah.
Well, we'll turn your phones down now if you like, Mark. And, of course, enough yapping on about Hunters and Collectors because you've got a disc out yourself.
Yeah.
Let's hear a bit of it now.
I'm wondering if you can get round to that.
Oh, we found a copy. It's Last Ditch Cabaret from Mark Seymour here on Martin Malloy. It's Last Ditch Cabaret. It's Mark Seymour. He's right here. What were we just hearing there, Mark? What was that all about?
It was about a nightclub.
Any particular nightclub?
Oh, or? I don't want to say. I might end up playing there again.
I see.
It was just this gig I did really early on in my acoustic solo experience, and I just kind of stumbled on the idea of writing an album, and I was out playing around.
Right.
And actually launched a venue, and the audience were like, I'd never played to an audience like that in my life. And, you know, much as people might think that playing to hairy, loud boys... is a frightening concept, you know, when there's thousands of them jumping up and down the spot. This was like something else again. It was like, they're all described in the song. The punters were all, I described them closely in the verse one and two.
I don't know if you'll take this the wrong way, but it's damn close to pop music, Last Ditch Cabaret, Mark.
Oh, I'm pleased to hear that.
And what are you aiming for? It's just a sniff we're getting of your album. What else is on there?
The album's pop. Mm-hmm. But see, it's a pretty loose term because I've actually used that term to describe. I've described it that way to some of the more influential journalists in the country, and they've gone, "Well, I don't agree with that."
And what is it about this music that makes it stuff you couldn't do with your band of so many years?
I wanted to really exercise my voice in a more dynamic way, and with the band, I'm always out front of a very loud beast, even in the studio, it tends to. The best results with the band, even when we're recording in the studio, are loud rock and roll. That's what we do well. And my voice tends to fall into a particular type of... And I've believed for a long time I could do something different, more sensitive and softer and like pop music, you know.
And so, is it good to be in charge? Is it good to not have to get stuff approved?
Well, I still haven't worked that out yet, you know.
Just press play, record. This is my album.
Yeah, well, I keep saying that, you know. Who's? They go, who's?
And, of course, you're going to be asked about this a fair bit on these publicity tours. You're working with the brother.
Well, he's the one that keeps asking me. Who'd you say was the boss?
What is that like? I mean, when was the last time you worked with him proper?
Well, I have never, actually.
Never?
Oh, well, I was in a choir with him, a family choir. I was in grade 3, he was in grade 1.
Yeah.
And he had a very high flute-like voice. which he brought to this recording, actually, strangely enough. Like in the early hours of the morning, he'd get on mic and do these harmonies and surprise the hell out of all of us.
You must have had a bit of a garage band happening, though, one
We
point.
Did, actually, at one stage. The Vacant Lot.
Oh, yeah.
Our only gig was in my parents' lounge room when they went away to Europe on this six-month-long service leave thing.
Right.
And the band played Lou Reed, excerpts from the Lou Reed live album, a rock and roll animal album.
Oh, yeah.
And,
yeah.
Nick learned the solo, and I was sacked. And I had to operate the lights, which was like basically, you know, the lounge room lights.
The fluoros, the faders. And how was it reviewed?
Favourably, of course.
And now you get into a studio with him. What's he like? Is he disobedient? Is he trouble? Is he trying to slap you around?
I haven't got to that stage yet.
Okay.
He's disobedient, though.
No. He's a tad weird, too. I love him like a brother myself. But I've gone in to do recovery one morning, and he's standing there in makeup with full facial makeup on, in like eyeliner and mascara.
Well, he wanted to take on the Australian Aussie bloke, you know.
I'm wearing
makeup every time I appear on stage. This band, I'm going to appear as a woman just to sort of blow the boys away. I don't think anyone noticed, though.
He's well down that track, let me tell you.
And what about the live shows themselves? How are you enjoying those? You must be pulling out a few surprises. Do you come out with King of the Road to close with? Eddie, just out of left field selections, no one's going to be able to normally pin on you.
That's not a bad song to do, actually.
Oh, it's a great song. It's the choice of drunken karaoke performers everywhere, I find. Do you have a karaoke selection, Mark?
Hang on.
The slab?
Something just came to my head. I can see it, yeah. I can see it. I've never seen it on karaoke.
You've never done karaoke?
Never.
Oh, well, you've always got to have something to look forward to in music, I suppose. What is on the cards for you, Mark, when you put this solo album to bed? Are you back with those hunters and collectors? And, you know, are you going to be a bit more highfalutin with them now that you've...
Well, we've kind of relaxed a lot, actually, in the last couple of years, just because we're not sort of out on the road all the time, you know. And we've all got kids now, except for Jeremy.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Jeremy's available, for those of you who are listening. So we got a national tour Christmas, New Year.
Okay.
And the usual thing, people know what it's like. Well, we come to your pub.
Bring your singlet.
Wherever you are. And an album.
A Christmas album.
Yes.
Oh, hang on. You'll be going head to head with Tony Barber. Are you up to it? He's always got something out around Christmas. Don't you worry about that.
Oh, God.
Look out.
Let me catch my breath.
It'll be like the Blur Oasis kind of Britpop rivalry. It'll be Hunters and Collectors and Tony Barber.
We'll be the Aussie meat in the sandwich.
All right.
Well, all the best of luck to you, Mark.
Cheers.
Thanks for coming in for a series.
Thank you very
much. Let go here at Martin Malloy, and thanks very much to Mark Seymour for dropping by.
Yeah.
The album's on its way. The single is out now, Last Ditch Cabaret, with some bonus tracks, as they say.
And he's going to Adelaide too, if I remember. I think he said as he walked out the door.
Did he?
Yeah. He's appearing in Adelaide.
Is he doing shows there, or is he just popping over for a coffee?
He's just going to penetrate the border and get out.
Good on you. Thanks, Mark. And now, Pete, what's it time for?
It's time to play Prize Dicks. Have you made a dick of yourself lately? Maybe you've showed up at an AC/DC concert dressed like one of the Pet Shop Boys. Perhaps you've unthinkingly asked Helmut Kohl when the baby's due. Or maybe you're just the leader of the One Nation party.
He's okay.
He's fine.
He's okay. And hey, when you were here last, you were, you know, going to town on the Guru. You weren't a fan of the Guru's work.
Yes.
And we asked you if you'd seen the work of Mahatma Coat. Have you seen him yet?
I don't want to talk about that. It might get serious. It might offend me down the track.
That can be your next answer in Trivial Pursuit.
All right, thanks, Gurinda. And, hey, by the way, how's your stage show for Melbourne's Crown Casino, Red Hot and Gurinda, coming along?
Well, very soon. You just have to wait and see.
Okay, you get to work on those show tunes.
Sure, I'm working hard on that.
And, Gurinda,
yeah?
When you're driving home tonight,
yeah?
Don't do what you did the other night. I had to flag you down, you're in the car, you were driving home, and your turban was on the roof of the car.
Don't say it loud, man.
All right. Enough laughs at Gurinda's expense. Back to work, you, and a bit of a round of applause. We usually give him a round because I think it's only deserving for a man of his stature.
There it comes.
There you go. And listeners,
he'll be taking a bow in the freezer
as we speak. Okay, we've got a Lost World pack, and that's got all kinds of goodies connected with the Lost World. That's coming out soon, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I haven't seen it down my local multiplex, but it's on its way.
Yep.
And, oh, it can't come out till I've had the premiere.
There you go.
That makes perfect sense.
Till we get this stupid competition over with.
All right.
The Lost World is ready to go.
Well, we're sending somebody to Hong Kong, the New World, to see the premiere of the Lost World.
detail this Friday on the show about this time. But right now, you can call us and get in the running for that prize on 1-800-657-657.
This is Martin Malloy.
Yes, it's Prize Dex. Martin Malloy.
I've jumped into the fray.
Gracie, we're taking him down to the vets after the show. We're going to have him done. We're very close to securing those Mark Seymour dates. The pigeons have been released. Let's stretch this out.
Yeah, I know.
Get a bit of suspense on the show. But it is Prize Dex. Mm. Dex from all points of the big brown land. Who's going first, Mick?
Let's look in the direction of Andrew. How are you, buddy?
Hey, fellas.
That's all right. Andrew, tell us, how did you, how did you get involved in this segment? How did you make a dick of yourself?
I was spearfishing in a lagoon at North Stradbroke Island.
Oh, very nice, yep.
And I'd only bought the gear about a couple of weeks before.
Right, so you're not an experienced spear fisherman?
Not at all, and okay. Hopeless.
Okay.
And I'd been just about every day, and it was finally this day in the lagoon, I finally found a fish that wasn't swimming away as soon as it saw me.
Right.
So I managed to get up really close to it. Couldn't believe my luck. I fired at it, and I just sort of winged it, didn't hit it full on. But instead of swimming off, it just rose vertically in the water.
Right.
Because it was somebody's bait.
Oh, so- And did you fight them for it?
No, I stayed underwater for a very long time.
I saw Andrew down at the counter of his fish and chip shop.
Oh, yeah.
With a loaded gun. Oh, just waiting for someone to move.
Oh, I saw him going one on the wall of a restaurant frame. Okay.
Saw him going one as Rex Hunt was trying to kiss it.
Oh, like, you don't want to do that.
Right out of his mouth.
Oh, you don't want to cut Rex's lunch. Thanks very much, Andrew. You have made a dick of yourself, but so has Christine. You there, Christine?
Yeah, I'm here, mate.
Where are you calling us from?
From Queensland.
Oh, and how have you made a dick of yourself up that way?
I was down at the local RSL club one night getting pretty pissed and... I'm not sure what time it is, but I think it's about 9 o'clock they turn out the lights for a minute remembrance.
Oh, yeah, the minute's silence, gotcha.
Yeah, well, I didn't know about this and I stood up and said, who's that dickhead who turned the lights out?
Oh, oh, no. And how was that received? How did that go down?
Not very well with the old diggers, I say. Not very well at all, but my friend's got a giggle out of it.
No, it doesn't tell you. You know, those diggers don't get upset at much, but I imagine that'd just about do it, wouldn't it?
Do you go down to the Anzac Day parade and say, come on, not here for an anchor?
No, not anymore. Right. I stay well away now.
All right, well, it's a lesson for everybody, I think, that story. Mm. It could happen, but Simon, have you made a dick yourself?
Yeah, completely, I'm afraid.
Yeah, how'd you do that?
Oh, I've been trying to build this cubby house. It's taken me a tad short of 2 years.
Right. Is it of your own design, or did you buy it sort of kit set?
No, I've made it up as I've gone along, actually.
Oh, nicely done.
Yeah, and we ordered this rather expensive colour bond roofing, and my wife actually made a dick of herself first by ordering it 500mm too long either side, so I didn't cut it.
Okay.
But it cost a bit. But then it was called birch grey. So there's this beautiful shade of grey, so I've put it on. I've never done roofing before, so got it all squared up, cut myself to pieces. Then I put the ridge capping on, it's a different shade. The bit I put on the bottom should have been on the top.
Oh,
put it on
no.
upside down.
Oh, upside down roofing. Does it look sensational from inside, but?
I suppose it does, but it's not very light in there, so I can't tell.
What do you mean, you put the whole roof on upside down? What, does the point go downwards?
All the colourbond's facing inwards, except for the ridge capping on the top. That's how I knew it was different.
Right, so, you know, 2 years' work down the poop chute?
Basically, yeah.
Are you going to start again?
No, I'm not going to take it off.
Oh, you can't lie down. You've got to start again, Simon. Follow your dream.
No, I wouldn't dare.
And who's the cubby house for?
The kids.
All right, what do they make of it?
Well, I haven't told them yet.
Oh, well.
I haven't even noticed. They're just too busy sort of, you know, they haven't looked up.
Oh, they'll be calling their dad the prize dick, I think. From
they will do when they notice, yeah. There's no question of that. The name's seen it, though.
Well, that's a story, Simon, and not a bad one. But, hey, let's talk to Liz. You there, Liz?
Yeah, I am.
What have you done to enter the Dick's Hall of Fame?
Well, I was on the terrace with my girlfriends for the day, and...
have we had this one already?
Anyway, I decided to go to the local Desperate and Dateless Ball held by the local radio station.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, I spotted the Brecky Crew DJ there, and went up and tried to smooch him and told him I loved him, and yeah.
Oh, dear.
And were you successful?
No.
And are you game to say where you're calling us from?
Old Errol Bay.
Oh, Errol Bay.
And who's got in the mornings there?
Who's on the mornings there?
Oh, I'm not saying. This was 2 years ago.
Are you married?
Yes.
You know what? You know who it was. Aggro.
Yeah.
Oh, he doesn't like that.
No.
Okay, well, that's a pretty good story. And is it our winner? Because we've got also internal roofing from Simon and, of course, Remembrance Day activities from Christine and hopeless spearfishing from Andrew.
That's where we're going, Andrew.
He's fishing for bait. He knows where the bait hides and he stalks it and he brings it home. Are you there, Andrew?
Yeah, fantastic.
You've got yourself the Lost World pack. You've gone into the draw for the trip for two to Hong Kong for the premiere of the Lost World. That'll be drawn this Friday.
Ripper.
Okay, thanks for making a dick of yourself today. Thanks to everyone who took part. And we'll be back with more dick action. Same time tomorrow on Martin Malloy. Article today talking about us talking about Ernie,
yeah.
But they still won't report why we're talking about Ernie.
Oh, can't do that.
Because he was treated disgracefully by, or at least Pete Smith was treated disgracefully by Ernie Sigler.
Hmm.
And it was one of the most shocking acts I've seen in my long history in show business.
Sure.
Sacking a bloke because he went on another show on the same station to do an obituary for Sir Eric Pearce.
Yep.
That said, I think we should sack Pete Smith. I don't think we need him.
Yeah.
As you're about to discover, bring it in, Grayson. Jeez, Tone, what the hell is that?
That, Mick, is Virtual Pete, set to make the real Pete Smith obsolete within 1 week.
Check out the bow tie.
5 times the size of the real Pete's bow tie.
Yeah, but, Tone, Pete has that little button he pushes, you know, to make his spin round and entertain the kiddies.
Well, watch this, Mickey.
Is entertaining.
And that's just the beginning, Mick. Look, self-cleaning tuxedo, onboard coffee-making facilities, and check the reproductive organs.
What? Couldn't make them as big as Pete's?
No one's developed that kind of technology yet, Mick.
Fair enough.
Want to hear him loosen the larynx?
I don't know, Tone. When it comes to announcements, there's only one Pete Smith.
True, but I've recorded every word, sentence and phrase Peter's ever uttered on this show and fed it into Virtual Pete here. Let me just switch on the vocaliser. Right, now ask him a question.
Virtual Pete, what did you do on the weekend?
I went sailing on my yacht.
Wow, it's uncanny.
Try another one.
What was the last movie you saw, Virtual Pete?
That would have been Waiting to Exhale.
Amazing. But Tone, surely Virtual Pete, even with 7 billion megabytes of memory, can't compete with the real thing when it comes to recalling showbiz anecdotes.
Throw him a name, Mick.
Virtual Pete, any funny stories about Don Lane?
I remember when Don was hosting the Logies back in the late 70s. He called me and...
Yeah, all right, you've proved your point.
Nah, come on, Mick, try another one.
Larry Emger? Well, come on, VP. What's wrong with him, Tone?
Oh, no, Mick, there are no funny stories about Larry Emger.
Does not compute, must destroy, Mick.
I thought that was meant to be his reproductive organ.
It's multifunctional, Mick.
Ow!
Right on the bot.
Tone, we're doomed.
Not for long.
Pete!
I'll handle this. Take that. Oh. And that. And that. It's lower.
Gee. Oh, thanks, Pete. It was just a crazy idea of ours. Anything we can do to smooth things over?
Sure. Just bend over, lads.
What for?
I just want to try this out. It's the new Ass Kick 5000. A bit of old-fashioned technology. You just spin this wheel and...
Bullseye!
Apologies to Pete.
You know, that won't happen again. Virtual Pete's gone back in its box.
Oh, dear.
Here's good news. I've got the Mark Seymour dates, and I was quite correct. He's on in Melbourne this Friday at, and of course, the Saturday as well, 16th and 17th at the Continental in Pran, the Condi. And then tonight, hey, if you're in Adelaide, he's on tonight at the University. So pop down there, 10 p.m. for Mark Seymour and his guitar in action.
Okay.
And I must also thank James of Fremantle. James has sent us an article from the Bulletin a few weeks ago, which I didn't see because the Bulletin doesn't have a Funny Dunnies page, so you know I haven't got round to it. But it's an article by some old fart writes for him. Tom Gilling is his name, and it's an attack on this program. He's gone to town on Martin Malloy, saying that our show is as funny as watching Laurie Daly crash tackle a hamster. Now, no. Is that time?
I don't know what that means.
I think that's quite funny, isn't it?
He's
Laurie Daly, big bastard footballer. Get a hamster.
Yeah.
Get Laurie Daly in here. Can we tee this up, Gracie? I reckon that's a cat. We can get that happening.
He's a funny man.
But James, who Jimbo, let's call him Jimbo.
Okay.
Jimbo from Frio has done a bit of research, and he's found a little attempt at comedy by the bloke who's written the attack on us, Tom Gilling.
Okay.
And he's written a little article. This is from September last year in the Bulletin. It's a little humorous story about postulating the idea that Martians might show up at the White House one day.
Oh, really?
Bit of twee kind of bow tie work. And do you want to hear the big gag?
Oh, please.
It's a very merry conceit.
Okay.
This is the big gag from the article, okay?
Okay, okay.
This is a guy who reckons our show is as funny as Laurie Daly crash tackling a hamster.
Oh, I'm ready.
Okay. One NASA probe was rumoured to have found traces of methane on the planet, tantalising evidence that the Martians are a farting, if not a fighting race.
Now, stop it!
I know. I know we like to bite down on a fart gag on this show, but have we ever done one that bad? What, he's mixed the word fighting for farting. That's just a bit obvious, isn't it?
Well, fighting, farting, I mean, who would have ever thought? He's toiled away for hours, hasn't he?
Let's get a segment on this show called The Humour of Tom Gilling. We want people to go through their old bulletins and send in examples of his work.
Could you?
And if we can get Laurie Daly and a hamster in here by next Monday, I'll be very happy, Gracie. Mm. And fancy suggesting that the comedy on this show is a very poor quality. What have we got to go out with, though?
Well, I don't know what we're going to go out with, but I'd rest my case when I get back to the Bay Maroney, Susie Maroney joke of earlier. I mean, that was, I think we'll all agree, fairly brilliant.
That's a leg up from fighting farting.
Do you remember what it was? I can't look. Let me see if I can recreate the magic live in the studio.
Oh, no.
From memory, I think it went a little like, I know a girl called Susie Maroney. She spends more time in the water than your normal abalone.
Everybody!
I love her, she loves me. That's the way it ought to be, making love. Covered in chicken fat, heading out to sea.
Read 'em and wipe, fools!
Okay.
Hey!
Well, I think we put that criticism to
bed. Sorry, has someone just crash-tackled a hamster? I think they might have. I'll be in my caravan, Tony.
What about Mark Seymour? Don't forget he's on in Adelaide tonight at the Uni at 10 p.m. Thanks very much, Mark, for coming by. And also thanks to Gorinda from our local shop. Drop by and watch him stretching those 1.5-metre lolly snakes. He does it himself out the back. All our radio gladiators and prize dicks deserve a big hand. We'll be back tomorrow, thanks to Coca-Cola, and we'll be bringing young Glenn Robbins with us. And just before we go, Miss Hanson, what's the time?
No, I'm not going to discuss that at this moment.
Martin Malloy is a misguided production in association with Half-Baked Ideas and Ill-Conceived Concepts Proprietary Limited. Brought to you by Coca-Cola. Pete Smith speaking.